Good evening. Welcome to the Solaria Report. Today is July 10th, 2014. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz. I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Our theme tonight is on the road again. I'm back out on the road. I left San Francisco on Saturday, headed to Southern California for the weekend. Great time in Los Angeles. Did coast to coast with George Nori on Monday and then drove out. I've been through Arizona, New Mexico. I'm now in Texas. I also had the opportunity to stop along the way and spend some time with Dr. Joseph Farrell. Always fascinating. You have these amazing insights when we get together and talk and talk and talk and talk. The thing you see is the thing I saw on my last two trips back and forth from Tennessee to California. Drought. No, it's no surprise that food prices are up, as we've been telling you for the last, well, for years now, but certainly we spent a lot of time in the wrap-up talking about that. It's going to continue. One of the things that was marvelous so far about this trip is having spent time with some of the people at the Breakaway Space, at the Secret Space and Breakaway Civilization Conference. I got more of an education on operations, and now it's really helping me as I drive from place to place to see the breakaway civilization economy. It's remarkable how invisible and well hidden it is, but with an educated eye, you can see a lot of it, and it's growing, and you can see the impact everywhere. So the conference was invaluable for me for many reasons, but that's one of them. Money and markets, top story of the week by far. Fed says it's confident in the economy and it's going to end the taper in October. That is very interesting, and I doubt that it is unconnected to the fact that we're seeing food price hikes that are unprecedented. I put up a graphic on the blog from a recent inflation article describing the January 2013 to January 2014 price hikes. Strawberries and turkey up 30 and 40%. It's pretty significant. We even see articles about the Fed watching food prices. Well, it's about time. The Fed stopping the taper is connected in no small part to the continued sort of creaking and trouble we see in the fixed income market. Expect more to come. This is only, I suspect, the beginning. We see a story from Bloomberg up on the blog about troubles in the repo market. We're coming into real troubles in the municipal bond market. We've known that for years. Article up on the blog about Flint, Michigan, thinking about declaring bankruptcy. And after Detroit has, we have significant problems with Puerto Rican municipal bonds. Of course, we see Argentina squabbling about defaulted bonds. So we're going to continue to see real issues of credit in the bond markets. With the Fed stopping tapering, that's going to increase the pain. And don't be surprised to see more and more money going into the equity markets, so the shift out of the long-term bull market in bonds. Article, very disturbing article up on the blog. I put up the Washington's blog discussion of it, but it was a Bloomberg report. Let me just read you some. Wall Street's biggest trade group has proposed a government industry cyber war council to stave off terrorist attacks that could trigger financial panic by temporarily wiping out account balances, according to the internal document. The proposal by the Securities Industry and Financial Market Association calls for a committee of executives and deputy-level representatives from at least 8 U.S. agencies, including the Treasury Department, National Security Agency, Department of Homeland Security, all led by a senior White House official. The Trade Association also reveals in the document that it has retained former NSA Director Keith Alexander to facilitate the joint effort with the government. Alexander, in turn, has brought in Michael Chertoff, the former U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security, and his firm. Representative Alan Grayson, Florida Democrat, said today he was concerned that industry members in such a joint group could improperly get involved in preemptive strikes against a person or state planning an assault on the U.S. This could, in effect, make the banks part of what could begin to look like a war council, Grayson said in an email. Congress needs to keep an eye on that, on what something like this could mean. And then Grayson tweets, ex-NSA Chief Keith Alexander wants to form a joint White House bank war council. So now Wall Street gets to declare war. This is, in fact, extremely spooky. And it is not disconnected to the creaking sounds you're hearing in the financial markets and the bond market. Bad for bond market, good for equity markets, but it could create an ever-escalating tensions in the geopolitical system. We're watching shift and implosion as change happens. Very interesting article that I posted up on the blog from Ambrose Evans Pritchard talking about fossil fuel industry is the subprime danger of this cycle and talking about what solar could do to fossil fuel. I have a hard time seeing that happen soon, but it very much depends on the technology, particularly the battery technology. So it's going to be very interesting to see. We're seeing all across the economy people and organizations that cannot hold on. The reengineering is accelerating. One of the areas is the debate in London about the new system to replace the gold fix. It's very curious to watch that discussion, as well as the tensions on banks and regulatory actions on banks in the Anglo-American Alliance, so here and in London. And I suspect that is connected to something very unprecedented that happened this week, and that is the Jimmy Savile pedophilia scandal hit Reuters. To see such a story come out in Reuters was pretty shocking. At the same time, we see more quote-unquote banker deaths. But if you look at the two that happened, it's up on the blog in New Jersey this past week. One of them had run a daycare center in Britain, and you almost wonder if it had something to do with the Savile story. They'd also run a network operations center for JP Morgan Chase. So there's a lot of very interesting data points in their resumes. I got a lot of questions at the conference on banker deaths. And again, if you look at the reengineering that's going on, I certainly don't see that as any sign that the financial system is about to implode, as is often implied. Geopolitics, a sort of a trial balloon out of Northern Korea indicating support for federalization and reunification. I have no idea how close we are to any kind of real proposal like that, but it is very important to understand the strategic importance of Korea to the United States in terms of staying the hegemon in East Asia and in the sort of Pacific Rim. And so Korea has the potential, if it does unify, to be quite a powerhouse. I have a hard time believing that could happen anytime soon. But whatever happens in Korea is going to be extremely important to the United States. Under the category who's zooming whom, Sun Valley, you have a group of billionaires and deal makers descend on the Sun Valley at this time every year. And there's an article in Bloomberg saying Sun Valley said to be on alert for drones. So now the billionaires are worried about drones. Well, what did they think would happen if they let that technology out? Also pretty gruesome from, another gruesome Bill Gates development, remote control contraceptive chip available by 2018. And of course, we see more and more Snowden revelations, along with more and more investments by Russia, now a railroad in the East. But you're really seeing quite a dance as Russia, Germany, China go about trying to sort of dance around the empire. Wild cards, there's been quite a lot of follow-up to the Secret Space Program conference. There were two things I learned there that I'm going to think a little bit more about putting on the Salieri Report. One is my presentation was about all the money that's gone missing. And I got a fair amount of feedback, including from Barbara Henniger, a wonderful researcher who was there, that a lot of people feel the big money has gone into building the underground bases and underground transportation systems and maintaining them. And I've always struggled with trying to figure out what the truth is about the extent of the underground bases. I certainly know they and the transportation system are there, but the question is how significant a part of the investment was it as opposed to investment in space. So I'm going to do some more research, but I think Just the feedback and the information from Richard Dolan, Mark McLandish, Barbara Honegger really helped me get a sense of, okay, this is a very important piece of this, and I have to understand it better. One of the things that was interesting, I posted one of the reviews of the conference up on the blog, and what was interesting, it was a very similar reaction to a lot of people. They basically said, you know, we've had more time to understand these issues, but finally people are beginning to emerge in that field who can sort out the disinformation. There's so much disinformation, it's very painful. Another thing that I have not yet posted on the blog, but that I learned at the conference was in Richard Dolan's presentation. The stream is now ready, so if you haven't watched it, I really encourage you to watch Dr. Farrell's two presentations, Richard Dolan's presentation, John Rappaport's, and then mine, all of them sort of dovetailing with each other. In Richard's presentation, he goes into what is possible to watch in the sky with night vision goggles, and I'm going to get a pair and try and learn more about that, but I think that is a very important piece of the puzzle, and if you watch his presentation, I would focus on that. Finally, we had Nines blogging for the conference, and she just posted her final piece on the blog, Fear and Loathing in Silicon Valley, Part 7, Dear Solarian Darlings, coming at it from the personal intimate side. We've seen a lot of pushback coming from points either made at the conference or, in fact, to the conference. One op-ed editorial from somebody saying I'm dead wrong that the Fed is not a private entity. And then Lars Scholz comes back with an article saying, yes, the Fed, the 12 regional banks are private entities. This is a squabble I'm not going to get into publicly because it's just a waste of time. But essentially, the Fed is a hybrid, and the Board of Governors is appointed in technically by the president and approved by the Congress. At the same time, if you look at the banks and what they control and the fact that they're owned privately, we're not allowed to know who owns them. We're not allowed to know who manages their database, who has access to that data, on and on and on. It's clear it's very, you know, the money system is controlled privately. And not to say that there isn't a hybrid structure at the board level. But Laura Scholl has decided to run this down, so we'll see what he comes up with. But, you know, it's at this point, if you look at the way the system is really governed, even if something is public, if you have a group of people behind the scenes who can kill with impunity, then everybody in the public position has to do what they say, which is why I kind of find some of these discussions dancing on the head of the pin. We also have, apparently, Mike Adams, somebody told me today, came out with an article poo-pooing zero-point energy. I don't poo-poo it at all. If you look at what the breakaway civilization is operating on this planet, whether in underground facilities or UFO-type or spaceships flying around, it's clear they're not running on a fossil fuel. They're running it on something else, and I think that's part of the power of the breakaway civilization is their access to new energy technology, and that's why they can do such extraordinary things on this planet, oftentimes in invisible ways. So I think zero point is a very important piece of the puzzle. Our hero this week is Richard Dolan and Joseph Farrell. I wrote about it in the commentary Promoting Women Part 6, which is part 6 of the series I'm writing on sort of the male-female divide and conquer. It came up at the conference. A wonderful subscriber asked a question about the male-female issue, and so I addressed it head-on as I've been writing this commentary talking about how important I think it is that women make men, you know, support men and help men become more powerful, and men help women and support women to become more powerful, and instead how in this culture we're being trained to tear each other down. The subscriber started it, and then I responded, and then Richard Dolan just went off. It was fantastic. It's on the panel on the evening of the 29th, and I encourage you to get it. And then Joseph jumped in, and it was a quick but wonderful sort of little conversation about this issue, which is so, so important. One of the things that I talked with Joseph about when I stopped to see him on the way back was the possibility of doing a two-day more intimate workshop, probably in October or November in California, where we gather people who just want to talk about this, and less of a conference structure, but more of a invention room together structure for a smaller group of people. So if anyone here in the subscriber base has interest, please let me know. You can post on the blog or just send to Ask Catherine or to customer service. But let me know your interest, because we're kind of percolating a possible design, and I would love to do that. Under the hero category, I'd also like to mention Stephen Gaskin, the founder of The Farm. He has now passed over the last week at the age of 79, an extraordinary man. The Farm once a year has something called the Ragweed Festival to celebrate the effort by the Lewis County Sheriff to bust them for growing drugs, when in fact they were just turned out that what the sheriff thought was marijuana was in fact ragweed. So they have a festival every year to celebrate that in Lewis County, Tennessee. The Farm, an intentional community founded by Gaskin and a group he led from San Francisco, has turned out to be one of the great, amazing institutions in Tennessee. Wonderful group of people, wonderful place, many good things going on. They're a group of people that do wonderful things all around the world. They have activities and ministries helping people everywhere. And it's, you know, Gaskin's contribution and the contribution of the group that founded that, and including my publisher, the book publishing company at The Farm. If you don't know about The Farm, check out their entry on Wiki or take a look at their website. Anyway, you can see the links in the obituary we put up for Gaskin on the blog. Ask Catherine. Again, remember, send your subscriber questions to the comment section on the blog, or post them to the comment section, or send them to askcatherine@solaria.com. Okay, comments. You are wonderful. Not that you didn't know it already. So much to say, so little time. I've read, spoken to military and political individuals, all coming to the agreement that a bug-out plan is not only necessary, but will need to be used soon. Thank you for the comment that things are collapsing, but it is a slow burn question. Have you prepared? Do you think a bug-out plan would be necessary should we supply to grocery stores get interrupted for a few months? Thanks, be blessed, and well done. I don't really know what a bug-out plan is. I never heard that expression. And I went on the web to try and figure it out. I do try to maintain 3 months of supplies so that if we have a war or environmental disaster, I can be fine for 3 months, and I encourage the Solari team to do the same. I do think it's important to be, you know, and it's one of the reasons I live in a pretty remote area around people who are pretty good at doing things for themselves. So I do think it's important to be prepared for those kinds of hiccups. And I have plenty of brooms and liquor and other things I can trade, in such an event. So I do think it's important to be prepared for those kind of hiccups. I'm not a person who believes in preparing for collapse. I think if we had a real collapse, and I think the chances of that are small, that's a very different picture. And I think my personal chances of surviving in that situation are relatively small. I enjoyed the interview with Jeffrey Smith and have been buying Post's grape nut cereals with a non-GMO verified label for a couple weeks. Today I went to Walmart to buy another box and found the usual stash off at least 30 boxes were entirely empty. How odd, I thought. I searched the shelf for another cereal product with the same anti-GMO label and found one, Uncle Sam Original. Are the marketeers testing to see if the only cereal product with the anti-GMO label is missing will be the dedicated anti-GMO shopper be sufficiently vigilant and committed to buy the only other anti-GMO product provided on the huge cold cereal shelf at Walmart? Please comment on air to help the troops keep the pressure on Monsanto. You're the information clearinghouse. Keep your music baton moving in a timely manner to maintain the tipping point momentum and pressure. I think it is very, very important to make that effort to get anti-GMO, but I also don't want the effort to do anti-GMO labeling to stop the pressure to also say, you know, we don't want GMOs anywhere at all. Thank you for all the wonderful Salieri reports recently. We came across a very interesting man who discusses microwave, radio frequency, smart meters, entrainment, etc., and we've listened to a number of the interviews he's done on YouTube. We think he might be an interesting person for you to have on the Salieri Report and wanted to bring him to your attention. His name is Barry Trower. I've watched some of his interviews. I thought they were very interesting. Thank you so much for sending. I posted on the blog. I'm going to do some more research and see if he would be a possible guest because I think his he and his information looks very, very interesting. Next question, how can I get a list of Canadian companies you think worthy of investing? I'm particularly interested in British Columbia companies. I'm an investment advisor. If you look at the rules and laws related to investment advisory, I cannot provide investment advice on the Salieri Report, so I don't provide that as I'm not registered in all states. So I'm free to discuss something like that if I'm in California where I'm registered, but not to a national audience, and I'm not allowed to advise people in Canada. I will say this. I think there is a great deal of opportunity in the Canadian markets and in British Columbia. So I think spending time in developing lists of companies in Canada is a very sound thing to be doing. Next question. If the U.S. government has always been issuing our currency and had always been in charge of our money supply instead of the Federal Reserve, would the amount of our national debt and the amount of interest paid on this debt be dramatically lower? In theory, possibly. Of course, it depends on how it's managed. If they just print a lot of money and hand it to the guys in the black budget, we could be ending up in the same situation. Can you explain why fresh food prices are going up faster than the overall CPI? Yes, one of the reasons is that the CPI is not properly accounted for. Number two is there are extraordinary drought issues. Number three, the markets have not been allowed to operate in the food space, and there's tremendous effort to get control of food and do a variety of things that centralizes control and kills tremendous small farming and other farms that would serve fresh. So it's a combination of intervention, financial manipulation, manipulation of the CPI, and drought is obviously contributing. From the next person asking questions, can you quantify how many trillions have been spent on the secret space program? I can only guess. That's what I do just based on a variety of things. If you look at the presentation I made at the secret space program, I gave an estimate, as I always do, on the financial coup d'etat where I got it. I think that if one were to fund a research project, it would be possible to come up with a reasonably serious estimate of what has been spent. And when I say on the secret space program, I would really make it on the breakaway civilization. So it would be the underground facilities, it would be the UFOs, and the other sort of space travel things. It would be on some of the satellites. On and on and on. What is your conception of the secret space program? Can you provide any evidence with what you call the secret space program? I would really refer you to Richard Dolan's work, Joseph Farrell's work, and then some of the other documentaries and research, and also Gary McKinnon's results, what he found when he was hacking, which I believe are true. The problem in this area is there's a tremendous amount of misinformation, disinformation. To figure out what's going on, you provide a framework. You're going to have to speculate. There's a lot that's unknown. But what I really think we have is, in fact, a breakaway civilization. I think it's underground. I think it's in the skies. I think it's pretty logical to presume that it is not only traveling the galaxy, but it's we probably are creating sort of bases on the moon or Mars or other planets. There's a lot that points to that possibility. So I see the secret space program as what began after the assassination of Kennedy and an effort to develop the capacity to travel space beyond what we know it to be. All the trillions spent on secret space program are being spent on Earth. I think a lot is, in fact, being spent on Earth, whether it's developing aircraft or underground bases or underground transportation systems or investment in all sorts of technology, some of which is being re-engineered out into technology that's in the in the overt economy. So I agree with you that the majority of trillions spent on the secret space program are being spent on Earth. Have you read about space mirrors? And then he puts two links about space mirrors. I've read about them. I know very little about them. How would you suggest we go about funding a space mirror program? I think, I don't know how expensive it would be. I don't know if the day could come when it would be possible to crowdfund such a thing if you look at the kind of capital required, or I assume required, to do these kinds of programs. It's pretty significant. So I don't see a way to do it without institutional support from a variety of significant parties. Next question. I'd be interested in your opinion of this article in Zero Hedge. Tyler believes that China and other foreigners have been buying up the U.S. housing market to control inflation. And he sends me a link to Zero Hedge. Did China just crush the U.S. housing market? And I will post that link up on the blog. I think there is some truth to what Zero Hedge is writing. I do think that the Chinese have been trying to recycle their dollars into hard and real assets, and that includes a fair amount of housing in the U.S. housing market. We've seen significant investment from the Chinese in sort of single-family investment real estate in California. So I think there probably has been a fairly significant investment, but I don't think it explains everything that's happening in the market. But there's no doubt that the Chinese want to get into real assets, and their investors all around the world want to get into real assets, and that's part of what has kept the stock market high. Let's go to the movies. Our movie this week is one that I've wanted to talk with you about for a long time. It's Steven Spielberg's series called Taken. Most of it I really can't comment on because it's on the whole alien question, which is one that's always had me stumped. I have no personal experience or knowledge. I've had the opportunity to talk with people who have, and yet, as I said when I talked with Dolan, I've never heard an alien story that couldn't be explained by disinformation or mind control. And, you know, it's if you look at my tool for figuring out if something is true or not, it's the economics of time and money. And, of course, something that's off-world, off-planet, doesn't lend itself to that explanation by that tool. The reason I wanted to recommend it to you is that it does show the early black budget culture, the members of the U.S. military and intelligence community that are dealing with the black budget, and their sort of insecurity and need for control, and in the interest of saving people, they kill them. It's really brutal to watch. But you really see their inability to deal with what they're dealing with and their tremendous insecurity and violence. And it's the best, it's the most insightful view of that early black budget culture that I've ever found. And so for that reason, I recommend it to you. Our interview this week is with Mark McCandlish, an internationally recognized artist. He, for years, did aviation and conceptual artwork for the defense and aerospace industries, and as a result got deeply involved in the nuts and bolts of how these different UFOs and sort of various space vehicles behave and act and how the technology works. He's a very remarkable person and has spent a lifetime trying to understand this. And I wanted you to hear from him because the reality is if you look at what is allowing central control of world politics, of finance, of it comes out of advanced technology. If someone has advanced technology, if they can build all sorts of financial power invisibly, if they can kill with impunity and use the technology to hide behind and get away with it, it gives them the power to centralize control of both the economy and world politics. And so understanding the technology is very, very useful to understand sort of what's happening, who's doing this, what's up. And I found listening to Mark to be ever fascinating. And there's no doubt that what's going on in this planet is just, every day I say it just keeps getting weirder. but remarkable person and a very remarkable, insightful source of information about what's going on. Okay, well, that's it for this week. I will be headed out from Texas and back in Hickory Valley, Tennessee, which I'm very much looking forward to this Sunday. So I'll be talking to you from Hickory Valley next week. Next week, we're going to have Selling You to You with John Rappaport. It'll just be John on his own giving you the fantastic speech he gave at the Breakaway Civilization Conference. Extraordinary, extraordinary speech. You don't want to miss this one. And, of course, I'll be doing money and markets. And then the following week, my second quarter wrap-up. Normally, I do it in the first week of the third quarter, but I wanted to wait until I was back in Hickory Valley and really had a chance to do a very sort of coherent, because there's a lot to wrap up given what's going on. And finally, July 31st, Chuck Gibson joins me for Equity Overview. That's going to be very interesting. When we closed out the second quarter, we saw a remarkable second quarter. The S&P up 8%, emerging markets up 6%. So equity markets continue strong. Gold ended up flat, but it looks like it's perking up now. And bonds continue to hold their own. The long treasury is up a little bit more than 2%, the bond aggregate flat. But it was a much stronger second quarter than I think a lot of people were expecting. And of course, it's sell in May and go away. So here we are. It's the third quarter summer. So it'll be very interesting to talk with Chuck about the equity markets. A good time to do so, because we continue to see unprecedented strength around the world on the equity side. So until next week with John Rappaport on July 17th, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.